Well, the Biz News Tribe was treated to a fabulous piece. So David Shapiro is well known as a broadcaster. And I'll say that, Dave, because you and I worked together, sure, for 15 years on national radio. Every night, Monday to Friday, there you were coming into the studio, chatting away and giving us your insights into what's been going on in the markets on that day. And, well, the wisdom appears to have just grown and grown. But I think a lot of people don't know the other side to you. You're a wonderful artist, cartoonist. I suppose if you had your life over, you might well have been Zapiro, who's also quite a surname of Shapiro, so it seems to work in the family. But the other thing is that you write beautifully. Your piece that you wrote for Biz News this week, man, it was out of the top drawer. And I think that if you hadn't been a stockbroker, South Africa's favorite stockbroker, you would have been South Africa's favorite columnist, that's for sure. So we look forward to those who haven't read it, to reading it, and to many more of that. But I thought, here's a great way to start the year. Let's tap into David's wisdom. Let's find out a little bit more about why he was bemoaning the departure of South Africa's business titans. And really, is it just nostalgia, or is there something deeper at foot here that we need to uncover? And I think by the end of this conversation, I've got no doubt that our community will be, well, pretty sure that you have got a very, very strong argument. I don't know how we fix it, and maybe you've got some thoughts of that too. But let's start at the beginning. It's the titans versus the spreadsheet managers, those who are entrepreneurs and those who are professional managers.
You know how it started? The last conversation we had, you asked me that question. You said to me, who are the people we look up to? Who are the businessmen we look up to? And I thought about it. I had no quick answer. And I said, Alec, there aren't any. In other words, we don't have the kind of businessmen or women that we used to have in the past. Nowhere near those kind of people anymore. And it bothered me. And I had a lot of time over. I didn't go away. I went to the game reserve for a few days. And I came back and I started to mull over what you had asked me and go back in my past. About the time that I'd spent on the market and the people that, you know, who used to influence the direction of the economy. And I think that's important. And there is no answer. I'm not a great academic in that way. And I had to try to think through it. And I came with three paths. I said the first was obviously overreach. We had some great leaders, but we, as soon as exchange controls opened, a lot of companies just went overseas without really thinking about it, caused a lot of damage. The other, without doubt, is the transformation, 1994 onwards, BEE and so on, what that's done to business people. And the third is, because of that, as a result of all of that, we're not developing anything. We've got no technology. And so, you know, I try to think about it. Alec, believe me, when I write an article, I go through every word. I go through constructing. I can't sit down like you. I've got a son, Jonathan, who's with a financial review. He's here at the moment. He can just sit down and, you know, I've read your pieces. They just flow beautifully. Now, with me, it's a labor. It's like I have to construct these. But it does give you the chance to think very, very deeply about where we are. So I have no doubt that if we had the kind of business people that we had in the past, we'd have a different economy. If we had that energy, if we had those foresights, the courage to do what they did. And, you know, we can go through some of them because I can go back a lot further than the ones that I mentioned in the article, just how they shaped it. And Alec, if you have a seminar, and then you think about those seminars that we used to have, the Financial Mail, whoever they were packed with some really strong voices. And I think we miss those people. You know, they gave us direction. They gave us confidence. So, yeah, it's we need to build those people up. We need to build up business people who are prepared to take risk who are prepared to forge this economy, you know, find gaps there, forge it to go further. You know, instead of who, the kind of managers we have now, oh, they're confident, very, very competent, but not willing to take big risks, not willing to move out of their comfort zones.
You mentioned Brian Joffe. We both know him well. You recall those annual get-togethers that he would have where they just grew and grew and grew as the Bidvest empire got bigger and bigger. Sol Kerzner, where's the Sol Kerzner of today? Raymond Ackerman, where's the Raymond Ackerman? Sure, the guys at ShopRite are efficient, but you don't get a feeling, you don't get a sense when you walk into a Checkers store that the people who work there are committed. Boy, they're champions. I don't know if anybody loves Checkers. They go to Checkers because, well, it's cheap. Whereas Ackerman was fighting a good fight. He was fighting the apartheid government. He was fighting for the consumer, bringing on cheaper petrol, and all the time, good business because people really loved that brand. Of course, Sean Summers got a hell of a job to get it right. But maybe that's where we start, David. Where's the Yanni Mouton? Where's the GT Ferreira? Where's the Brian Joffe? And why have they gone off perhaps overseas like Elon Musk and some others?
I think one of the big problems are our industrial policies. If you want to do anything in this country, and I said it last time when we spoke, I said, they give you a rule book. You know, they don't open the doors for you. They don't roll out the red carpet. And I think people misunderstand what a new business can do. You know, and I might have said this before, when you sank a shaft, you created a whole economic ecosystem. There was a whole ecosystem around that shaft. The people who worked there got money spent and so on. And that's the same with any kind of business that we start today. A new business brings in energy, but it also creates an ecosystem around it. A factory. You put a factory there, you know, everybody wants to work in it. Those who get worked in it get more money. They start to spend it. And so you get this multiplier effect. We don't do that anymore because we can't build factories. Why? Because when you want to build a factory, you go to government and government tells you how you're going to build it, where you're going to build it, who you're going to employ, who your shareholders. You can't do that anymore. And when you study the success of our former business leaders, it was the energy of a single person, I think, that really created these businesses, or a single group of people. You know, I go back, Alec, to Tiger Oats. I used to do the audit at Tiger Oats, you know, the Frankel family, Jacob Frankel, then Rudy Frankel. You know, you go to this big opposition, the Blooms of Premier Milling. This was a bun fight, literally, figuratively and literally a bun fight, you know, of who dominated those industries, the maize meal industry. And they were huge, huge people that when they went to a seminar, you know, or if you went to an event, when they were there, they had a presence around them that you wanted to rub off onto you. And I think if I could fast forward it to where America is to try and give people an example of it. You know, I was listening to Jensen Huang yesterday talking with the Siemens boss. And here's a man he's forging where America's going. He's building chips that are going to decide the future and passage of the American economy. You know, followed with, from Gates, you know, you've got Satya Nadella today, you've got all those leaders, Zuckerberg, whether you like him or not, they're all big, big names, Jeff Bezos. And so they've created the American economy, you know, and the environment has allowed them to do that. Elon Musk, hate him, whether you like. In his own way, he's a genius, but everybody knows who he is and what he does, and he doesn't stop. And I think that's the difference. There's no reason why small economies can't produce something very similar. And look at the number of people that we have built up who've emigrated to the US and have become, including Musk, Rudolf Buter, you know, people like that who really have made big, big names for themselves here. even in the medical profession.
You remember the guys who started Monster, which is one of the big energy drinks companies. They were here in Joburg. They were operating in Joburg. Well, Ivan Glasenberg from Glencore and so on. Dave, has the JSE lost its soul, though? Let's look within the JSE. And is this the reason that it kind of had a different vibe years ago? Because you had these giants. When Tony Bloom had his annual results, he would take people to a restaurant that had been undiscovered. It'd be something completely new in the south of Joburg or he had it in an old mill factory or something like that. It was different. It was creative thinking. It's almost like our guys today, well, A, they don't have those get-togethers for their financial results. It's all kind of just distributed online. But secondly, it's almost like they're shrinking violets, these CEOs, with the exception of a Neil Froneman and a few like him.
Yeah, there are those exceptions. But I just mentioned in the article, and I thought about it, the former business leaders would take on government. They took on the apartheid government. They weren't scared to share their views. Sometimes maybe they restrained it, their criticism a little bit. Today we don't do that. We tiptoe around, as I said, we tiptoe around government. You know, we don't challenge them. We don't say anything just in case. You know, the banks. Have you ever heard any of the banks moan about government? No, they don't say anything. Why? Because there's a threat that they might lose government accounts and so on. So everybody, nobody challenges anybody. And we just allow the rules and regulations to continue. There are no big voices who are going to go out there and say, you know, Mr. Ramaphosa, we can't continue like this. We can't, if you want to build a nation, we've got to change direction. We've got to encourage people to come here and not throw rule books at them. And we've got to create an environment that allows them to flourish. I don't believe, South Africa is an incredible country. It's an incredible country of opportunity. Alec, where you are in Hermanus, when you travel around the coast, when you see, and you would go to Cape Town today and just see flurry, you know, it's just flourishing with tourists and that. So, It's a country people want to succeed. Come up to Gauteng and it's just one big pothole because we've allowed that to happen. But there's certainly opportunity here. You know, I don't dismiss it. And that's why when I criticize and attack, it's not that I'm saying if we don't recognize what's wrong, we're not going to be able to fix it. You know,
Dave, you describe the JSE as having moved from being a stage for champions to a battleground for fighters. I love that analogy. What did you though mean by that? And maybe give us some examples.
Well, it's companies that are just fighting for survival. That's what they're doing. They're just managing the situation. We've got no electricity. Okay, we'll put up solar. We don't complain and moan and kick out government. We'll just get along with it. And that's, so you survive under the circle. No water. Okay, we'll put tanks in. And we carry on along that kind of way, just adjusting to the circumstances rather than saying, you know, starting a revolution and saying, listen, we've got to change this. We can't do this. I mean, I run every day here. And each day I find a new dam in Joburg, you know, which is a big pothole or crater that has just sunk there full of rainwater. And what do? I run around it. You know, I don't go and say, hold on a sec. Our roads need rebuilding. You know, we've got to do this or we've got to create an environment that allows us to have it. You can't let the infrastructure just evaporate or just be destroyed. Alec, I started in 2007, 2008. And I remember, and I'd come back from Australia and I was doing my normal runs around the country. And I started to see the institutions that make a company deteriorate. The law courts in Joburg, which were beautiful law courts, were just being neglected. The schools that, you know, the primary schools around here that were always beautifully kept, just being neglected. You started to see street lights, robots, all of those kind of things. And when that starts to deteriorate and decay, then you haven't got the infrastructure. You need that infrastructure in order to build an economy. And I started to write articles, you know, drawing attention. And my own community, you know, and I'm talking about the northern suburbs community, they used to attack me. They used to go at me all the time. So don't write negative articles, you know, we need clients. I said, hold on a sec. I'm doing this because it needs to be addressed, not because I want to attack government. I'm saying you've got to recognize what's needed to be done to improve the economy and create the environmental platform on which we can grow. And I promise you, I went through a lot of issues, and I've got a lot of stories about presentations that I made where, you know, they'd throw rotten apples at me and bananas and get out of here. You know, and I was just trying to say, hold on a sec. You know how economies grow, know what you need. And if we just create that environment, and I'm saying fix the roads, fix the conditions, make schools safe, make everything, people will start to spend. They'll start to invest in this economy rather than taking their money out.
So I'm watching with a lot of interest what's going on in Venezuela right now, because there are some parallels with South Africa on the basis that Venezuela was a flourishing country, the richest country in South America. They were delivering 3.5 million barrels of oil a day. That's down to 800,000. The infrastructure was pristine, lots of reinvestment. It's now collapsing and needs 100 billion, just on the oil side, to get it back to just normality. And Donald Trump, bless him, has decided that the way to change all of this is to go into Venezuela, whip out the president, and to basically do what the socialists hate and are so petrified about, this thing called regime change. But the question has to be, what about the Venezuelan people? And you think, well, if the Venezuelan people could see this, and 8 million of them decided, we're just buggering off, we're just leaving, leave the rest of them to carry on with it. And those are the parallels that I'm seeing in South Africa. We've got an economy which is just on the slide. You've been writing about it for 15, 18, nearly 20 years. Highlighting these things very politely, very diplomatically, very kindly. But when you look around your social group, you look around people who could make a difference, well, most of them have said, what the heck, let's just pack our bags and go and fight a battle somewhere else where it's just so much easier. What is it going to take for the South African, the average South African, to say, hang on a minute, this is not what we signed up for. This is not what we deserve. We didn't put these guys in power to make us poorer, to give us a Nicolas Maduro experience. We want to unleash the potential of this incredible place that we were privileged enough to be living in.
I think you literally start block by block. You know, you fix a block and keep going on. You fix a school, you fix a hospital. Those are the issues that keep people in a country. When they feel safe, and when they feel safe in their little houses with gardens, that they can walk out into the road and not be attacked, you know, when they can go down to the shops and again, you know, not face crime or not those kind of issues will keep people here. And those are the simple issues. People do want to live in South Africa. I mean, I bumped into a very successful business person. It's not fair for me to mention his name. And he said, this is the greatest country in the earth. There's nothing. Well, he's very rich, you know, and he lives in a very nice house. He can travel. He can send his kids to whatever school's about it. But he sees a country like he wants it to be, not like it really is. We've got to see it how it really is at the moment. I don't think it's all that difficult. It's not about having white papers and green papers and all these things. It's just about fixing what we already have, you know, fixing the roads. You said we had the most incredible roads, highways. We had the best hospitals in the world. Every doctor will tell you how foreigners wanted to come to Baragwanath because it was such an incredible way to train yourself, to get training, to understand. Today, it's nowhere near like that. All our doctors go. And so to come down to the bottom line, look at the life that you're leading down in, in Hermanus. That's, you're happy there. You're wonderful. You will invest in Hermanus. We've got to replicate that around the country. People are going to these safe havens where they feel comfortable. We've got to make Joburg. I love Joburg. I'm not a Capetonian. You know, I'm never going to be a Capetonian. And I loved what Joburg represented. You know, I loved the gold mines. I loved to fly over the dumps. You know, that was Joburg. I'd been brought up in the history of Crown mines, and I knew every mine that had ever been developed here. That was my Joburg. And I loved the stock exchange because it pumped. You know, we had gold mines, we had platinum mines, coal mines, you name it. This was a vibrant, energetic economy. As a result of that, we had all the other businesses that came, you know, the industrial side that had to service all of these. And that's the economy, the South African economy that I grew up with and knew. And I look at it today and we know in the other. And that's where my sadness comes. But it doesn't mean you can't get there. And I'm not saying that because just using false words or easy words. You know, I knew what created that. That's not difficult to create.
So let's go back to what caused all of this. Maybe the hubris era. Because post-1994, South African companies, those executives that we've been applauding, they thought they're going to go and take on the world and they're going to conquer the world. Maybe some of them thought, oh, there's a dangerous place. It's going to change. We've got a liberation organization coming in. The future is not going to be that great. Oh, we need to diversify rapidly outside of South Africa. Now we can. Anyway, whatever caused it, we've had disasters. Discovery going to the US, they drop a billion rand back in those days. Woolworths goes to Australia. I don't know what they dropped, but David Jones was an unmitigated disaster. Sasol goes into the United States, biggest foreign investor in the United States, builds a plant in Louisiana, eventually has to sell half of it just to keep the thing going. And it's still now it's lumbered with huge amounts of debt. Another disaster. Old Mutual, SAB Miller, offshoring themselves, Dimension Data. It's just a litany of disasters of South African businesses. So on the one hand, we're saying, where are these entrepreneurs? Where are these titans? But on the other hand, post-1994, they did not exactly do us proud.
No. And I think there was a lot of hubris. There was a lot of arrogance and self-belief. And the things that they had, it's like running a marathon. You know, if you run 5 marathons or 6 marathons, you say by the 6th, nah, I don't have to train. And I promise you, you run that 6th marathon without doing the same training, you feel it, you fall over and, you know, finished. And I think they dropped the ball. You know where the blame also lies? Every time there's a deal, a company does a deal, I ask the question, did you initiate the deal? You, Mr. Manager, Mr. CEO, or did some fancy investment banker come from London in his pinstripe suit with his Oxford accent and kind of overwhelm you and you feel humiliated, not humiliated, you know, you feel a little insecure about around him because he's got the snotty accent and so on. And you think that he's from the aristocracy and you go and do deals. And that's the biggest. Beware of investment bankers. They're after making money. It hurts it. You know, when you've gone and done your research there, and you, as a very good operator here, have identified something in some foreign market that you've believed that you could run properly, doing the same kind of investigations that you knew, you know, that instinct that you had, go and do the deal and then go and investigate. Alec, I go to America often. I've got a daughter in Boston. I've been going there for over 20 years and I spend a lot of time there. I would never think of opening a business in the United States. You're getting into the ring with Rottweilers, not with those poodles, you know, not with a Cocker Spaniel. You've got to be really, really tough to take on the US. They work. I said to my son-in-law once, because he was working for an investment bank, and I said, Brett, for God's sake, you know, you're working so hard. It was holidays. He says, I don't work hard. He says, my clients work hard. In other words, I've got to work at that pace. He can't help it. And believe me, Alec, that's an environment that you don't want to take on, you know. And so if you're going to go offshore, if you're going to do these things, just use the same kind of instincts that you did. Yeah, to build up your businesses. Don't just sit at a boardroom and say, well, it's not my money, it's shareholders' money, so what? I'll lose reputation, they'll lose money. So I'm still very, very wary of a lot of deals that are being done. You know, we've got the Mr. Price deal now at the moment. You want to know, listen, who initiated this? Did you pick out that company, or did you have some fancy, you know, US bank, and a global banker coming in and say, we've got a big deal for you? Very important.
And the problem, the problem with those helpers and super helpers, as Warren Buffett called them, is that when you put them on the spot, they seem to be expert in somehow wheedling out of it. I went through a billion rand deal that I was quite involved in. I wasn't involved in doing it. I was involved in it when it happened afterwards. And I remember these investment bankers from Dubai, and I really gave them gears. They brazenly lied about the projections, and the actual numbers that they put on the table were, David, they were pure fiction. But they'd got their money. They put their fees in the bank. Their client had been paid, and the buyer was ended up with the baby. It was a South African deal, so it's not a. Can just imagine how much worse it would be in an international deal. But that one that you're talking about now, in Mr. Price's case in Germany, it looks crazy. The market has given them such a big thumbs down. What would turn that around for you? What would make it something that you'd even give a cautious vote of confidence to the Mr. Price team?
Not at all. I just don't know enough about it to endorse it. I understand that they're running out of room in South Africa. It's becoming very competitive. As I say, we're going down and down, you know, looking at the low end of the market. Everybody's going down simply because at the top end of the market, there's no growth. So they've decided to go overseas again. And I'm very, very dubious, about whether this is successful. You've got to know those businesses well. You've got to have followed them for years. You know, it's one of the problems, and I say this to a lot of young people as well that even, you know, work for us, especially with AI, especially with the technology that we're seeing at the moment. Everybody, every day there's a new company coming up. And I say, hold on a sec. You know, it's like going on a date. You go on a date and you have a lovely time with a very attractive lady or partner, whatever it is. And you don't go the next morning and propose. You've got to learn about this person. You've got to learn the good times, the bad times. You've got to follow that. You know, you've got to allow the relationship to develop. That's why I'm saying when you buy companies, when you start to invest other people's money, and I say other people's money, and Mr. Price, if they want to invest their own money, they can do what they like. When they've got shareholders' money, pensioners' money under their control or responsible for, they've got to be very, very careful. So they've got to know that company, not just what they've seen on FactSet or Bloomberg's, you know, tracing earnings going up and so on. You must have followed that company month by month, day by day, or whatever it is, quarter by quarter. And only when you understand that, then you can make those kind of decisions. Say, look, I like this business. We don't do that, Alec. We're so fast. We've got so much technology at our disposal that we think that we know everything. You know, we construct charts and spreadsheets and everything. There's a lot more to a business.
Let's move on to another area now that you did tap into in your piece, and that's about the compliance officer trap, policy versus prosperity. You know, the days of Harry Oppenheimer standing up, fighting with government, saying, I'm going to invest in this mine, even though I know it's a 30 to 50 year venture, because I do believe that eventually common sense will prevail, and then this idiotic government will have to comply with what happens in the rest of the world. We don't seem to be having that today. There's no Harry Oppenheimer who's saying, I know the ANC are on the wrong track, but common sense will prevail. Why is that? And why is it that businesses or executives have just succumbed to this whole compliance tragedy, which they just have to be subservient to.
They've given up, yeah. They've given up. I think the regulation is just overwhelmed them, that they just haven't got the energy to go through it. Alec, start a bank, you know, just, or even a broking firm or an investment, anything that, just understand what you have to go through on a day-to-day basis. You know, it just wears you down that people eventually say, you know what, I'm out of here. And I think, in the, you know, even if you came to me and say, David, you know me for a long time. I want to open up an account at some Swiss bank or something like this. In the old days, if you phoned me up on the floor, I'd say, Alec, you say, David, I want to buy 100 Harmony. I say, okay, I'd quickly fill out a form. We get an account open for you and boom, I'd buy the 100 because I know you. I know you, and I know that you're going to honor your obligation. Today, by the time we've got that account open, it could be 2-3 weeks, by which time you say, nah, I don't really want to buy them any. And I'm just giving you a very small example of what we go through. I can't tell you how many compliance officers a business like ours has, as opposed to where we are, you know, as opposed to those front-end people who are developing the business. And so we've been worn out. And then add the complexity of BEE to South African companies. You know, constantly looking at what the level of your staff is. Who's your head of research? Who's head of the trading? You know, are they the right color? Are they the right denominator? Blah, blah. So eventually, there's so many hoops that you have to go through. You actually lose that desire to make things work. America's not like that. You know, other countries are not like that. It's far, far easier to get through. And I think people like Trump are actually trying to, you know, break it down and do away with this excess regulation. But Alec, it's South Africa. Just if you go back, I know that China is now the manufacturing, or it's going to Vietnam, or it's going to Asia. And just think of the factories that we used to have. Going back to when you first started writing, when you first started on the market, they were phenomenal. Our clothing factories, we supplied Harrods. We supplied all the best retailers in the world. Yes, you know, we had an incredible, Rex Trueform, companies like that, House of Manatic, so and so. Just think of what we used to have here and where that's all gone. You know, whether it's placed by Shein or whatever it is, Temu, it doesn't matter. We had those skills, and we still can develop those skills in our own way. And other manufacturing, industrial manufacturing, you know, that anyway.
It would need.
I'm getting a bit nostalgic.
No, but it would clearly need a rethink of regulations. It's like those regulations did not stop the criminals from taking over South Africa's criminal justice system. They did not stop the Guptas from raping this country. So, what are they doing there? Why are we wanting to have regulations in South Africa which are not working for the real crooks, but are making those who would like to invest their energy in growing the economy, it makes them stuck in treacle?
Yes, that's the answer. I mean, how do they get away with this? You know,
they just ignore it.
They just ignore it. No. They just, we've got no bite. Mm. Our government's got no bite. You know, we don't have strong leadership. You know, it's very, very weak. And we're not the kind of leadership that can actually change this country or turn it around. I don't know whether the DA has got it either. I don't know. But we need a younger generation of leaders to start emerging and saying, listen, we want to build this country. You know, we really want to take it to where it is. Africa has not reached the potential, and I don't like the word potential, but it hasn't reached the levels that we thought it would back in 1994. We were so pumped up there, and we had such good young leadership that was emerging. And I include the Ramaphosas at that stage. You know, if you look at the class of 94, there were some very, very, very good people there who wanted to make South Africa work. What happened? They said, hold on a second. We can actually make money for ourselves. And one by one, they started emerging. They started their own businesses, and it became the elite that enriched themselves to levels that are quite remarkable without doing anything. And they went to the white companies, you know, if I can use it that way. They went to the company and say, you need us. You know, you want me to be on your board? It's going to cost you 2 million rand something in fees. I want 25,000 shares. And I'm going to tell you something else. I'm not coming to a board meeting. Okay. And that's how they got into 7 or 8 boards and so on. And we paid our price. We felt guilt. And that was the beginning, the genesis of the destruction of this economy. You trace it from 94.
Well, when you look back now at a business titan, I guess exactly what you've articulated a moment ago is that they are often worn down, worn out. Where do you have the time to think, to reflect, to sacrifice, to make the investment when you've got all these regulations that you have to, first of all, take care of? And it's almost like, well, your major job now as a CEO is just make sure you don't break the law, because there's so many of those laws. Even but the crooks are breaking the laws all the time. We know many, many businesses in South Africa don't pay VAT. They couldn't be bothered to pay VAT. And we know that from personal experience. A guy will often say to you, Do you want to pay me in cash or an extra 14% and I invoice you? Or 15% rather, and I invoice you. So I guess you get that. And you need a really special person to emerge from that. And I suppose they say, well, let me rather go somewhere where I don't have those issues. David, what about your final point that you made in your column? Clearance sales versus moonshots. What did you mean by that?
I mean, moonshots, I'm talking technology. In other words, getting to the moon, moving forward, you know, moving. I mean, when I look at AI now, I'm absolutely taken away by what this can do and where it's going and how it's going to improve productivity. We need it here. You know, we need it in a big way. We need the data centers. We need the young people to design or to help businesses now start to use AI and to move forward. I'm sure that there are a lot of kids like that who are well. What's happening now is that when I say clearance sales, where's this economy going? Just look at the companies that we like. They're all going down to the bottom end of the market. You know, for example, and I love the company Pepco and it's doing incredibly well servicing the informal sector. But that's where our focus is. It's down at the bottom. How can we make money out of these poor people who have never been banked or haven't got the money in there? And that's where the rush is. How many bankers are going to try and get into that area? Look at who's the most successful retailer, Boxer, you know, ShopRite, or at those levels. And I'm saying, hold on a sec. Let's get the bar up. Let's become a techer for Africa or do things like that. Let's start thinking that way. Rather than trying to service the under the poverty stricken people or those who haven't got the money. That's what I want. You know, let's develop, let's try, and there's going to be plenty of room for us to build our own apps, to build our own data centers, to use those kind, you know, these new applications to help, to build factories here. I know that you're not going to employ people, but to become an area of expertise. And that's where, you know, that's where we kind of fallen behind. There's no, you go look at the JSE, other than Tencent through Nice Person Process, there's not much. It's a very old economy, JSE.
David, what's your advice then to a young entrepreneur? And they're still being born, they're still coming through. 10% of the population wants to work for themselves. They want to change the world. They want to provide a service to others that will be an improvement on what currently exists. And my goodness, that's not difficult in the place we find ourselves in. What's your advice to them?
There's another problem. Sorry, I should have mentioned it. You go to our bank. You go to a bank and say, I want money to start this business. They'll look at you and say, no, first of all, you've got to give me collateral here. You know, you've got to give me your wife, your children, your home, everything before I lend you money. We don't do that. There's no VC money. There's no venture capital money here to allow these poor people. You know, when I say poor, I mean to people to advance businesses. We haven't got that mindset that is available in America or other countries. America, there's an abundance of investment capital to allow these entrepreneurs to develop. We don't have it. So don't tell me Standard Bank, First Rand, Investec, none of it. You will not get a dollar, a rand out of them to start a venture like that. They just have not got the mentality. And that's a massive problem. And I say it's a massive problem because our banks don't lend money. Even if you've got a nice balance sheet, it's almost impossible to get anything done here. And we've got to find access to the funds. There's always stories about those funds, but it's very, very difficult. Nobody wants to take that kind of risk in South Africa. And that's another big, big problem, to allow young people to develop businesses. That's why they end up offshore or wherever they do. They take their, you know, they got a great idea. They're not going to develop it in South Africa. They'll take, what's a great idea? It's some, you know, you take the idea and you get on a plane and you're off to somewhere else. So it's, understand that as well. I think it's also a very important point. Our banks are also got to loosen up a bit.
But we do have a world that is interconnected. We do have access to all of the tools now that anybody anywhere else on this planet has got. It, the fact that somebody sitting in San Diego doesn't mean that they can access Gemini and I can't. We can both access at exactly the same time and for the same resources. The same with Grok and other incredible tools which are transforming the way that you can serve the population or the community that you've chosen to do. So putting that on the one side, putting our great people, because we got great people. I mean, despite all our issues, everybody smiles here. I mean, that's just the reality of South Africa. I suppose our weather's got something to do with it. So you got the weather, you got the people, you got lots of skills, lots of smarts here. What is your advice to a young entrepreneur, a 20-something guy like you and I once were, who's saying, okay, I want to live here, I want to swim in the sea, or I want to go to the Joburg clubs or whatever it is that motivates them. I'm committing to this country. What is it that I need to do as an entrepreneur? How can David Shapiro help me, mentor me, suggest to me that I can do that and be successful?
I think don't give up and go hammer on the door of those banks and let them know what you think about them. You know, I think you've got to have that perseverance and energy to get somebody to listen to your story. And as you correctly say, you can live very comfortably here and still do it. You can still do it with the technology, but don't give up and start, you know, formulate your ideas. There's no reason why you can't have the same kind of ideas as a kid in New York or in Kansas City, whatever it is. You're dead right. And tailor it for businesses around here, or even take product that you've got offshore, come to businesses here and try get them, you know, try and help them. But I think you've got to have that. We've got to create that energy, you know, and take away entitlement. Take away that entitlement attitude that we do have here in South Africa, you know. And I think that to me is a big problem. You've got to, you know, meaning that don't use the rules that are in place to your advantage, you know, become genuine entrepreneurs. I might be talking in obscurely, but I'm talking at, you know, certain other population people. Just do it. Just go out and do it and try overcome all those kind of obstacles and that. But Alec, we need some of the banks as well. There's a lot of money in this country. Believe me, there are fortunes of money in this country which are available to be let loose in the right kind of environment. So I haven't got the exact answer, but I mean, if you've got an idea, you want to stay here, you've got the skills, just don't give up. just do it. You know, do it.
Now that's, I remember that was a the motto, not just of Nike, but of Bill Lynch, who was South Africa's Entrepreneur of the Year in 2006 and was the world, the only time that South Africans won it, the World Entrepreneur of the Year. And Brian Joffe and Koos Becker were came close, but Bill Lynch actually won it. And he used to, asked him at, I was around, I was covering the event in Monaco when he was given that award. And I said to him, Bill, what do you tell young people? What do you tell other entrepreneurs? He said, just do it. Just do it. This whole idea, we find out reasons why we can't, our background is tough, or you know, we haven't had rich parents, or the opposition is just too powerful and these big corporations. He says, bugger that, just do it. And I think you're confirming it.
Can I just give you my own example? Where's it? About 15 years ago, or even earlier, when I started handling client business, I had two slides. And the one was, you know, well, I really one slide. I said, why buy in a spaza when you can buy in a supermarket? Meaning, exchange credit open up, let's go overseas. And everyone came to me and says, what do you know about overseas? I said, nothing. I said, absolutely nothing. I said, but anyway, I built a whole business around offshore. And I started to take clients. Not simply because there were better businesses. There were some great companies that we started to invest. And all I'm saying, what I'm getting at is that I could compete because of the technology. And it comes back to the example. I could compete with the best in New York, wherever it is, because I had access to the same information that they did, that they had. And we started off by themes and say, okay, which companies fit into these themes? You know, and if it was four, we'd buy the share and so on. And as things went, so you started to develop a knowledge of these businesses to a point where my entire business now, I have a very nice little business there with most of it, 80% offshore, which we've been doing for 15 years. And, you know, the whole point was everybody said, what do you know? You know, what do you know? You know, and I promise you, there were times when we stood in the market and stayed in the market. I said, this doesn't seem right. When people wanted to go out, when all the big names would say, get out of tech, get out of this, get out of this. I said, no, it doesn't seem right. You know, just stay the course, stay the course. So I use it in my, even in my old age, you know, saying, listen, you can learn new tricks. And I was never at a disadvantage. In fact, and sometimes an advantage to some of the big names, you know, that we know about. So you can do it and you have all the access in the world to actually do that.
Dave, just a final point here. While the US has produced companies like Amazon, Tesla, with the South African, Apple, and Asia has produced Tencent with South African funding from the early days. Here we seem to be stuck in the old economy. It seems to be almost like we've got a mindset which says, let's build factories and employ lots of people, which kind of the robots have taken that game. If not the robots, then the Chinese. So I guess my question is, how does one start? You spoke about fixing South Africa block by block physically. But how does one start fixing the South African mindset block by block intellectually that, hey, that doesn't work anymore? You can't build factories that are going to make things because the robots and the Chinese have got that. You need to now look at things differently, and you've got huge advantages, including that we have the same access to the technology that anybody in the world has got. How do you do that block by block story?
You need the voices. You need the powerful people. You know, you need people to start giving that message. And you start to know, you need examples. You know, I'm building this kind of factory. This is what it does. And from that, other people will follow. You need those pathfinders, those trailblazers to start doing it and to create that environment that this happens. And we don't do it. You know, and also governments to blame, because government still wants... has an old mindset of how an economy should operate. It's not moving forward. its whole attitude towards what a factory should be and, what an economy should be, beneficiation of metals or beneficiation, of minerals and so on. We still have that mindset. And they're pretty good people. They're pretty good people here in South Africa at our universities who have got those attitudes, who can start it. But we've got to have an example, where everybody comes and stares in awe, at this new factory that's robotic. And some of the modern factories are just phenomenal. And, when I listen to Siemens and when you see what they get, look at Caterpillar. Caterpillar, what is Caterpillar? You'd think of it as a yellow metal, but that's becoming an AI company because not only are they applying AI in the factories, in other words, to produce the caterpillars, but the caterpillar machines themselves are AI machines where you don't need people to operate and everything. They will be run autonomously, or is that the right word? Yeah. So, those are the kind of things that we've got to start seeing now and doing. I know it might cost labor, but when an economy thrives, regardless, everybody benefits from it because it grows out its tentacles in other ways.
And I remember visiting India and being reminded when looking around in India and at the enormous levels of poverty. I mean, the reality there is that people literally sleep on the streets every night. You go to Mumbai, there's just like millions of people who literally take their little blankets and they sleep on the streets. And to understand the philosophy, the mentality in India, which was all about, we've got to get this right. We've got to turn this around. We've got to promote enterprise. We've got to get an economy that is thriving because that's the only way we're going to get these people off the streets and give them some kind of a future. And you can see that the Indian economy is thriving and growing despite the enormous challenge of taking 1 billion people. Now, we in South Africa have got 60 million people. We're a fraction of India. We're small by comparison. It's a much easier fix. And yet, the mindsets of the Indians are just light years ahead of us, it appears. Who knows, David? Maybe with your wisdom and your continued banging on the drum or banging on the door, one day that door will finally open. I remember listening to someone talking about, in fact, it was Peter Major yesterday in the conversation we had in Mining Web Weekly. He said, Alexander the Great, when he attacked the Persian cities, he would put up his siege warfare and bang and bang and bang and bang against the walls of these Persian cities. And you couldn't see anything. But eventually the cracks came through. And eventually the walls fell down. Now, that is how Alexander the Great conquered an empire many times his size. Perhaps with your banging away one day, those cracks, well, I think the cracks have appeared already, and that the reality of what we faced with, a country with one of the highest unemployment rates in the world, a company where the criminal justice system, your rule of law, has been infiltrated, at the very least infiltrated by criminals, and we know that from the Madlanga Commission and what Mkhwanazi's had to say, a country that has got everything going for it, excepting the wrong mindset. Bring on those people who will change and look at things differently. And we don't have to go the way of Argentina pre-Malay or Venezuela during the Chavista eras. We can actually make this into a very, very successful country for all people in South Africa. And I think people like you, David, have played a big role and will continue to do so, we hope.
Thank you. I think we all love being here. we don't want it to change, but you've got to recognize that change is due. And also, don't keep your mouth shut. If you've got something to say, as long as it's not insulting, when it's constructive. And I think that's the big difference. Be constructive. So
keep banging away on those walls and eventually the reality will dawn. David Shapiro, South Africa's favorite stockbroker. He is the man at Sasfin Securities. We look forward to seeing more of David in 2026. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.